Hi, everybody. This is Carrie Diamond. I'm the editorial director of Cherry Bomb Magazine and the host of Radio Cherry Bomb. This is a special episode of the show that we put together very last minute to talk about the issue of sexual harassment. As I'm sure most of you who are listening know, we have April Bloomfield on our cover that's out right now, and a story came out the other day about April's partner, Ken Friedman, who has been a guest on this radio show, about harassment and just the very toxic workplace that existed at their organization. And it's, you know, I'm not going to lie, it was a very sad day when I read that story. Ken was a friend, April's a friend. April is, an icon in this industry. A lot of women have looked up to her. A lot of women work for her. A lot of women who worked for her went on and opened their own organizations. And it is never an easy day when you run a magazine that is about feminism and food to see things like this happen. At the same time, and I'm not reading from a script. I'm just talking from the heart here. You know, at the same time, as painful as all of this is, it is necessary because we're going to have to go through some pain for things to improve. And as sad as I am also heartened that these things are coming to the surface, because if we're not talking about them and if we're not shining a light on the ugliness, nothing is going to get better. But what I wanted to do today was have some people on the show who have organizations that are really models for the rest of us. These are people who have given a lot of thought to the culture in their organizations. They have put policies and procedures in place to make sure that they have workplaces that are zero tolerance for things like sexual harassment. And these people very kindly agreed to jump on the phone today, even though they're very busy, and this is a very busy time of the year. So right now we have on the phone Aaron Patinkin, who is the CEO of Ovenly. Aaron, thank you for being on the phone with us.
Thank you for having me.
And we have out on the West Coast, Preeti Mistry, the chef restaurateur behind Navi Kitchen and Juhu Beach Club in Oakland. Preeti, thank you for being on the line.
Thanks for having me.
Anybody who is familiar with Cherry Bomb knows these two women. We have written about them. They've participated in our conferences. They've been on the radio show. And I've admired them for a long time, just because they really are role models in this industry. They are outspoken, and they have always done the right thing, and not because they've done it in reaction to something else. They've done it because it is what they truly believe. So, Preeti, if you want to start, how many employees do you have at your two places?
Between the two, I think about 15 to 20, if you count part-time employees.
And when you and your partner were putting, you know, Juhu was your first place, but you'd worked in lots of different places, from big corporate organizations to smaller restaurants. When you were thinking about what you wanted Juhu Beach Club to be in terms of the workplace and the culture, what did you have in mind?
I mean, I think it was always incredibly intentional from the very beginning, and I think that's something that all chefs and restaurateurs need to really think about. That we wanted to make sure that this was a workplace where all people felt comfortable. And in fact, people who may, because of the toxic state of the larger industry, that might never even feel that they could even try to be successful in those traditional restaurant environments, could have a place where they could come and work, whether that's in the front of the house or in the kitchen.
And do you have policies and procedures in place? I know your restaurant is a small one. You don't have an HR department. You know, how have you communicated what is acceptable and not?
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, so we do, it took us a long time because we are such a small company, but we do have an employee handbook, and, you know, there are specific things in there that do state that we have the zero tolerance policy for any sort of sexual harassment or discrimination against anyone. And then I think that most importantly, it's how you live that, and how you lead by example every day in your restaurant. I think that's really what it comes down to, because no matter what's written in a handbook that people sign that's, you know, has a lot of legalese and is, you know, 30 pages plus, it's how you lead every day. And I think that for us, it's really been championing all different types of people. I think that one of the problems that arise in this industry, which arise in most industries, is because there's no intentionality put into celebrating diversity, and there's one sort of dominant culture, which is oftentimes a very white male patriarchal culture that permeates. And then everyone sort of goes, oh, well, this is just how it is. We don't know how to change it. But you have to be intentional about making it different from the beginning. You can't just wait and hope and then say and throw your hands up like, oh, no, sorry, sexism. Oh, no, racism.
Say something pretty, like one of the things that you pointed out, too, is that it's also not good enough to just say, I have a diverse staff, therefore everything is fine within my organization.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's not just about hiring a diverse group of people. It's about retaining that group of people and also checking in with them and knowing how they actually feel about working for a particular organization. So at the end of the day, you know, a lot of this comes down to a lot of powerful people, and we all need a piece of that power. You know, I'm going to see a resume from someone who worked at the Spotted Pig and immediately be like, oh, my God, they're going to be an amazing server. Like, they're a pro. We all need those places on our resume in order to get somewhere in this industry. So just because I think, you know, if any, like, restaurateurs think, well, they have so many people of color, so many women working for them, like, it must be a great place. But have you actually checked in? Have you actually talked to people and found out what their actual experience is?
Preeti, I'm going to interrupt you for just one second because we do have Martha Hoover on the line. She's going to join us. Martha is a restaurateur from Indianapolis. She has over a dozen. I think we dropped. Well, that's what happens when we have a live line. Martha will be joining us. We just lost her, but she has over a dozen restaurants in Indianapolis, and Martha was also was a lawyer with one of the first sex crimes units in the country. So. Martha has a lot to say on the subject, but Preeti, I'm sorry. Go back to what you were saying.
Oh yeah, no problem. I look forward to hearing from Martha as well. You know, and so I think that part of it is just the culture of how we talk to each other and how we, you know, I think about these things in our culture that are so embedded. You know, I remember working in fine dining in London, you know, 15 years ago, and you know, Christine Mansfield came in for dinner. And, you know, we got her order in the kitchen, and the sous chef with this extreme, like, positive, he meant this in the most, like, complimentary way. He looked at her ticket and was like, oh, she eats like a man. And it was, like, the biggest compliment he was giving her. You know, or you have Michael Bauer saying that Dominique Crenn cooks like a man. It's creating this culture that still puts the man at the heart of it. We're all trying to be like that. Instead of celebrating different people. Because I think that that's what it comes down to, is that patriarchal culture that exists, no matter who is actually behind the stove or serving the food, there's still this idea of what is celebrated, and it's this sort of, you know, Captain America, John Besh kind of figure.
Exactly. Aaron, I want to... I want to give you a chance to talk about Ovenly and just the sort of organization that you and your partner, Agatha, decided to create when you... How Ovenly's been around now for 7 years?
7 years.
Yeah. So when you were creating the organization, what was the intention?
Well, you know, when we created Ovenly, the intention was to build a company, not really thinking it to the future, to having almost 60 employees. But about 2 years into the company, when we were starting to actually hire people, when it was beyond Ag and I in the kitchen every day, which we are not in the kitchen at all anymore. I come from a background of, I've worked for nonprofit organizations. My last job before Ovenly, I worked for a large national women's organization. I've worked in different communities doing social justice work, and Agatha's background is in social work, and we started talking about the type of hiring that we wanted to do. So the first thing that we decided was that we would have intentional and open hiring practices. So that means that you can come to our company, and if you have had gaps in your resume, if you have had interactions with the justice system, if you are formerly incarcerated, if you're a political refugee, we'll consider hiring you without a resume. And the way we do that is we hold interviews, we get recommendations, and we do trails. So there are a lot of people in our kitchen who start with us who have never held a job in the food industry before. And, you know, we have different, I think we have 16 different countries represented on our staff. We have a very ethnically and gender diverse staff. And I think one of the things, besides the intention behind the practice, something, you know, I think that one of the things that we also have to recognize is that even within the structure, this male-dominated structure that we live in this industry, there are still challenges that we have to face as leaders. So, yes, there's a challenge upwards, pushing against this, like, male-dominated cycle for in the media, in funding, et cetera. But I think the other thing that we really have to work for is making sure that we're creating an environment on the ground that is safe and happy and, you know, supportive of our staff. And so that's really what we're trying to work towards. And, you know, I think that that's just become such a huge part of what we do, and beyond the handbook, the trainings and how we promote and how we hire, it is really been based on the challenges we've faced and how we've worked to deal with those challenges. So, you know, one of the things that has come up with a lot of these reports of sexual harassment is just, you know, to me, one of the things that's like such a huge problem is that there are partners, there are managers, there are other people at the top that have heard the rumors, whether they've witnessed some sort of abuse or not. They haven't done anything about it. And I think that that is something that's very concerning to me. And there are ways that as leaders, we can foster the type of culture and work environment that we think is safe, again, safe and healthy for staff. So I think, you know, when Agatha and I started this, we didn't think we would be doing this, and we moved into it. We've faced a lot of challenges, and we've had to come up with solutions to those challenges, which sometimes include snap decisions to fire people for violating. And I think that that's where it's not just, you know, the restaurant industry, it's where we have to move as a society so that we all can work to the best of our abilities without feeling like we're in a threatening environment.
We're going to welcome Martha Hoover on the call. Martha, are you there?
I am, and I apologize if I have to hang up rapidly. I'm babysitting, quote-unquote, for a three-week-old infant, and without the benefit of having a bottle. So
oh, no.
If she wakes up, I have to hang up.
Okay, we understand. We understand.
Thank you.
So Aaron was just talking about setting the tone. Aaron, how many employees do you have now?
We have 54, but we're about to hire 7.
And how do you, you know, with so many employees, you obviously can't talk to them every day. You don't see every employee every day. How do you set that tone?
Well, firstly, we have a management staff, and we have, with that management staff, continually done trainings. So every quarter, we do trainings. We do a sexual harassment training. That actually our staff then turns around and does for our other staff. So everyone on our payroll at some point within the year will go to it through a anti-harassment training. We do other trainings like skills building so people can understand where their strong suits are so that they can work towards those. We've done conflict resolution trainings. We've done improv training, and we do a lot of team building. So we start with the managers, and then we move through the organization doing trainings for staff. But one of our mandatory trainings, besides safety training, is an anti-harassment training for every single staff member. And you have to do it within your first 3 months of employment at Ovenly. And if you don't, you can no longer work for the company.
Now, Martha, how many restaurants do you have at this point?
I have 14 restaurants, all in Indianapolis, Indiana, and we are over 400 employees. And I ditto what everything that Aaron just said. We do all of that as well. But as my organization gets larger, I find message dilution to be one of our biggest challenges. So even though we do all this training, we have this wonderful orientation program, and we have continuous training for managers and offsite training for all staff, including managers, there are just many instances where the messages don't get communicated properly or in the voice that I need it to be communicated in. So I do think that you get a little bit of message drift or evolution, kind of like that old-fashioned telephone game. So it's something that we work on daily, how to communicate not through others, not through the managers, but directly to employees. And that has been a real critical, it's been a basic game changer for my organization once we realized that we were getting, there was too much filter happening, even in the most well-intended and one of our most, you know, one of our highest producing managers still put their own filter and their own lens on the message. And sometimes that wasn't the quite filter and quite the right lens.
Now, Martha, I had mentioned that you started out as a sex crimes prosecutor in Indianapolis and one of the first sex crimes units in the country. And I'm just curious, like, what's, given your background and what's going on right now, what are you thinking? What are you feeling?
Well, I think that being in, especially in a what was then a very innovative area of the law, sex crimes, it really, what it did is it, I hate to use this phrase, but it woke me up a long time ago and made me see through the, not just through the lens of a perpetrator or a lens through a victim, but also the lens of culture and where culture is at the moment, you know, at that very moment. So I'm not at all shocked or surprised that these revelations have become open. Quite honestly, I'm surprised that they have not hit the airwaves before now. And I find that a bit discouraging that we're just now talking about these issues, because certainly we all knew that they existed. But I am very hopeful that with this conversation happening in such public forums, I was in my restaurant just until one of my restaurants until just a few minutes ago. And quite honestly, everybody, not just my staff, not my executive, not just my executives, but our customers, our delivery people, are all talking about this news. So I think that there is an opportunity here for companies that are not doing the best, they're not being the best stewards for their staff, not protecting their staff, not setting expectations properly, not keeping people accountable. I think it's a great, great moment where people can actually work to really change their company cultures, to embrace defining leadership differently.
Preeti, I feel like you're someone who's been speaking out about so many things for so long. you must be similarly frustrated. Like you've been talking about stuff like this forever. You know, why did it take now for this to happen?
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just a matter of women and people in general feeling like they're actually going to be believed. I think that the power, you know, all of this ultimately is about power. It's not really about sex. It's not about men and women in the workplace and what goes on. It's about power and people abusing their power and their privilege. And those that are fearful of speaking their truth to power is a real thing. And, you know, I think that obviously, you know, I never imagined, a month or so ago with Harvey Weinstein revelations that it would continue in this way. And it's amazing. And I think it's a really inspirational thing to see that so many women in so many industries have felt
for so long that they couldn't speak about this because no one would believe them. And the machine was just so much more powerful than them. So, you know, to me, I think it's a great moment, you know, for so many women to finally feel vindicated for things that maybe even happened as long as 12 years ago that are abhorrent.
But, you know, I think all that is so, this is Martha, I think all of that is so accurate and so true, but I think there's an underlying issue of how society values, truly undervalues women and female currency, that allows this yeah. behavior to be seen as standard and par for the course.
I agree with what you're saying, and I think there's another layer that is not coming out with a lot of these allegations too, is that the industry, it's what Preeti said, it is about power, and it's also mm-hmm. power over people who don't have it. So, you know, something else that's endemic in the industry is shift pay, wage theft, you know, people not getting paid overtime, people not getting breaks. And I think that this is I too am shocked that the conversation has continued and that it hasn't stopped. It gives me hope. But I think that this movement needs to start addressing other power structures as well, because it's not just the sexual harassment, it's the verbal abuse, it's the lack of rights that a lot of employees in the food industry are facing.
Yeah, and we're still in this moment really talking about the binary. So we haven't even started talking about other forms of abuse, of power abuse or harassment that exist in our society. So I think this is a great moment for us to peel back the onion, but there are a lot of layers to this phenomenon.
So what are diners supposed to do in all this? A big question that we've been asked, you know, how do you know that you're supporting restaurants that are doing the right thing?
I think it's so hard to know. And I think that I think that the issue is very complex. But, you know, something that Amanda Cohen, who's the chef at Dirt Candy, pointed out in an opinion article that she wrote for Esquire, is you can start by looking who the owners are. If you really, really, really care about that conscious consumerism, look on a website. Does someone have a mission stated? Does someone have core values stated? Is there something beyond just the menu? That might be an indicator that there's at least an organization that's trying behind, you know, your dining experience.
Having a mission statement on your website, even if you're a restaurant, is going to be an important thing moving forward.
And you know what else?
Definitely.
I think just tagging onto that is I know that I didn't do, even though I truly believe that my organization was bar setting and has been bar setting since 1989, I did not do a very good job of bragging about it. Because I felt like when I talked about it, it was bragging, and I thought that was not polite. I think that's an issue that a lot of women have, is not being bold enough or audacious enough to say what you're doing and to be very out there and to be very honest about what your organization, how your organization values its staff, how it values its community, whatever it's valuing. Even though we did that internally, we were not talking about it externally. And I think that women have to start doing a better job of telling their own story.
I agree with that.
Can I say something, Carrie, about the diners? I just
mm-hmm.
Also think that one thing that's really important is really questioning what we as diners value in terms of our dining experience. And really thinking about championing more small business owners and women, and obviously what Aaron was saying about knowing who the owners are, but also thinking about just the experience in general. And, you know, one of the things I mentioned on Twitter in the last couple of days was just that maybe some of these restaurant investors should look at who they are investing in, because we all know that it's predominantly very white male dominated. And so they have all of the big beautiful, gorgeous restaurants with the big bar and all of these things that people want and desire. And I wonder if we as diners also want to look a little deeper what is so exciting about all of those things, and what are we really championing and celebrating in those experiences?
That's a great point. Preeti and Aaron, can you still stay with us? I know you have some time constraints. I didn't know if you needed to jump off the phone.
I do have to hop off
okay.
the phone, but thank you so much for having me.
All right. Well, I appreciate it, and I appreciate all the work you two have been doing.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
Bye. All right. Bye-bye.
Martha, are you still there with us?
I am.
This might be a really hard thing to talk about, but, you know, the news about April, it's like I said earlier, you know, when a feminist icon in the industry has been revealed to have done, you know, the things April did, and which is turn a blind eye to what was going on in her restaurant, you know, it's a very hard thing. It's a hard thing to accept and to, I'll just leave it at that. It's a really hard thing to accept, you know, when mm-hmm. you think of how she's mentored so many people, but, you know, turning a blind eye to harassment, as we've said, is just so unacceptable. I don't know. Did you have any feelings when you heard when you read the reports like everyone else did?
I was so disappointed that she did not view her turning an eye as incredibly problematic, because mm-hmm. she's at the top of the food chain, and she really had this remarkable opportunity to run her business a different way. But I also believe that, and I think, Kara, you and I talked about this, I think she's being vilified, yet Mario Batali's partner is not being vilified. He probably knew what was going on. John Besh had a bunch of partners. I don't think they're being vilified. I'm sure they knew what was going on and weren't just complicit, but, I think that these are complex subjects, and sometimes you cannot assume that, I don't think we can assume that April was as complicit as her statement would indicate.
Yeah, I mean, the hard question right now is, where do organizations like that go? You know, somebody called me from the media earlier and asked if those restaurants should be boycotted. And I said, that's a really hard question. I said, yes, obviously you should boycott them, but yes, the two people at the top, you know, deserve to be punished. But do the hundreds of people who work for them deserve to be punished? You know, there are a lot of people with kids, with jobs, with just bills like everybody else has. I know Jose Andres talked about that earlier today as well. You know, do you punish everyone from the servers to the dishwashers, for the sins of the people who own the organization? And that's another tough thing to answer right now. I don't know what the answer is to that one either, but I don't know. I don't want to see hundreds of employees be hurt.
Yeah, you're right. That's complicated.
Yeah.
It's so complicated. And I agree. I don't want to see employees lose their security and lose their jobs because of this. But at the same time, as a consumer, I know that as a consumer, I try to support businesses whose values are, and this is a trite way of saying it, but whose values are aligned with mine. And I think that's critically important. And as an owner of a business, I really work hard to make sure that the gap between what we say we are and what we are is incredibly thin. So I understand both sides of this, but as both a business owner and a consumer, I don't want to support businesses that are a bit of a fraud or that aren't doing the things in their running their own business that I find to be incredibly important.
Yeah.
So if a restaurant serves the most amazing food and has the most remarkable, and let's face it, April's food is amazing, and the environments are great, but it bothers me greatly that there's obviously a toxic culture, work culture, and I'm not sure that I could support that right now unless I knew that they were making some tremendous strides and really working towards realizing what they had created and working to change it, and
yeah,
change it pretty drastically.
Yeah.
And I would say the same thing if I thought that, for instance, a company I admire a lot is Patagonia. And if I found that everything they talked about doing, their stewardship of the environment and the way they treat their employees, et cetera, the quality of their product, if I found that a large part of it was a bit of a fraud, I would have a very hard time buying that jacket. So I have to kind of extrapolate, and I am sorry for any employees that might be kind of collateral, you know, have some collateral damage there. I think it's really sad. But I'd like to give it all a little time to kind of settle to see where April is taking her organization. It's obviously got some damage to it, and I would hope that they would really work hard to make some immediate corrections.
Yeah, I think I don't know how that organization is going to turn things around except to commit itself to radical, immediate change.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I wish other leaders in this industry would come out and commit to radical change. I think, you know, this waiting for the next person to be picked off and then they, you know, beg forgiveness. And I just would like to see the industry come together and talk about, how do we deal with this? How do we tackle this? You know, instead of just waiting for like, okay, John Besh did this. Okay, Mario did this. It's clear that there is this deep, deep problem in this industry. And I would really like to see the industry leaders come together and start to talk about just how do we completely eradicate this from the business. And, mm-hmm, you know, it's having all those procedures in place, but it's also, it's a much bigger thing than that. It's an attitude, and you can't.
Yeah, there are things that should be non-negotiables, you know, in every business, and harassing people in the workplace should be an extreme non-negotiable. And I agree, Carrie. I think it's critical that leaders in this industry really step up now. Everyone's been so innovative regarding food and food sourcing. I think it's time to look deeper into how restaurants are run, because if you can be innovative on the food side, you certainly can be innovative with how you treat your staff and how you spread that power, how you spread leadership opportunities, and your commitment to not only the staff but to your community. And I think that right now we're in an industry that needs tremendous disruption, and maybe this is the disruption that we're looking for. Maybe this is it.
No, this is it. All right. Well, Martha, I really appreciate you calling in. I appreciate you being a role model. Aaron Preethi, I mean, we need role models right now, and we need people who, whose organizations we can look to and be inspired by and just learn from. And I think that's definitely something I want us to focus on, you know, the Cherry Bomb community moving forward. You know, everyone is angry right now and upset and justifiably so, and more of these stories are going to come out and there's going to be more ugliness. But I think the only way we're going to move forward is to look to the people who have quietly been doing the right thing, because that's what they feel deep in their hearts and their souls. And, sometimes those are the people who don't have big machines behind them. Sometimes those are the people who don't have PR. Sometimes are the people who don't get the media attention. I definitely want to commit Cherry Bomb's resources to next year focusing on people who are doing the right thing. So Thank you, Martha, for being one of those people.
Well, thank you so much for allowing me to be part of this conversation, Carrie. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it, too. And congratulations on your not just your first grandchild, but your first two grandchildren.
My first two. And we just opened up a new restaurant 5 days ago.
You did. Get a plug-in.
So
get a plug-in.
Thank you so much.
What's
thank
the
you,
restaurant?
Everybody.
Tell
thank
us about
you.
Tell Bye-bye. Us about the restaurant. Oh, Martha, are we losing you? Okay.
Yes.
Get a plug-in. Come on. You might as well. You're on the air.
Get a plug-in. Can I talk about Crispy Bird?
Yes. It's tell fabulous. Us about Crispy Bird.
Crispy Bird. Look it up. Instagram. Crispy Bird Chick. Thank you, guys.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
And thank you to everyone who tuned in. We take this issue incredibly seriously, and I hope all of you know that. Cherry Bomb is a community. You can DM me, you can email me, you can get in touch with us however you like. We are listening to you, and I hope everyone out there knows that. And thank you for tuning into the show. Thank you. I know a few people are trying to tune in, and we're having some technical issues here. But anyway, sorry, we don't always do call-in shows, as you can probably tell, but I hope it didn't sound too rough out there. But again, thank you for tuning in, and you were listening to a special episode of Radio Cherry Bomb. Thank you. Bye.